Susanna Brayling spoke with some Sunset High School students in May about her experiences growing up in Argentina and Sweden before settling in Oregon. Her interview is a part of our ongoing oral history project.
I'm Annabelle Rosser from Sunset High School.
I'm Sarah Packham.
I'm Julia Nutt.
Today's date is May 31st, 2012. And we are here with, what is your name?
Susanna Brayling.
Susanna, where did you or your family come from, and what year did you come to Oregon?
It's a very convoluted story, but when I first moved to Portland, I moved from Sweden to Portland because I was studying in Sweden, but I am Swedish-Argentinian. I came to Oregon from Sweden.
How old were you?
When I came the first time, I was 20. When I came to Oregon, I was 23.
So did you live like almost your entire life in like Sweden and Argentina?
So I was born, I have Swedish parents, I was born in Argentina, and I did most of my growing up years in Argentina. We moved back and forth between Europe. The situation in Argentina was volatile, so was born in 1971, and then we left in 1973 because the military took over, and then we moved back to Argentina in 1975.
How long did you serve there for?
And then I graduated high school in Argentina. And then I moved to the States to go to college.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how long did you live in Sweden for me?
So my parents were Swedish, but I actually didn't live in Sweden very long. I lived between 1973 and 1975. We lived in Europe, so we lived in Belgium and Switzerland and Sweden. And then I moved to the States when I graduated high school.
Okay. What school did you go to?
I went to Wellesley College
in
Boston.
Yeah.
Yeah. So pretty much, I graduated high school in Argentina and knew I wanted to go, did not want to stay in Argentina for college, mostly because my parents didn't want me to. And a lot of my friends were staying, but a lot of my friends were not. And so most of the schools that you know of overseas are the Ivy League schools, or schools related to Ivy League schools, or schools that really try to get an international student body. And Wellesley was one that had a really impressed me because it had a big international community. So
how
I went there.
You don't have an accent, do you? Have you been speaking English?
Swedish was the main language that we spoke at home, but I learned three languages simultaneously. So my parents were really strict at home, speaking only Swedish. But then my school was an American school. And so we spoke half day Spanish and half day English up until high school, and high school it was all English.
Oh, wow.
So, and then the community was very mixed. It was very international. So there were all kinds of languages spoken all the time.
So why Oregon?
So I finished college in Boston and I moved to Sweden because I really wanted to move back to my roots and find out what Sweden really was. And I look very Swedish, so I really wanted to try living there. So I went there for my master's, and the third day I was in Sweden, I met an American guy who was studying in Sweden, and we fell in love, and I was in Sweden for a year, and then he was coming to Oregon to do his master's at Portland State University, out of all things, and so I followed him here, and was only going to come for 3 months because I was doing my master's in Sweden, and I found a professor at PSU who was doing what I was doing, and so I came to do my thesis work here and packed one suitcase. I was coming for 3 months and that was it, and I ended up staying for a year and then went back to Sweden and finished my master's.
What did you study?
I studied limnology. My master's is in limnology, which is freshwater biology.
Did you have pretty cool ever experience like any culture shock like in Argentina, Sweden, here?
Yes. So Sweden and Argentina culturally are extremely different from each other. So growing up there was already cultural differences between what my parents believed and what Argentina was. I mean, Swedish culture and then very Catholic, conservative Argentina. And so I already had that, and then I moved to the States, and the first year of college was really hard. I did not like the food here. It was not. The freshman 15, you're supposed to gain 15 pounds. I lost 20 pounds when I moved here because it was hard. It was, the food here is really different.
What's the food like in Sweden?
Well, I think it's just different kinds. Mm-hmm. It's more natural, I think, and a lot, it's more, like Argentina's known for their steaks. I mean, they have fantastic food. I miss Argentinian food. It's great meat, and the produce is all fresh. It's organic without having to say it's organic. Yeah. It just is. And it's great. You know, there's a lot of Italian background, so great Italian food, and there's a lot of all different kinds of food there, and they're fantastic pastries. So now every time I go back to Argentina, which we do about every 2 years, or Uruguay, I just gain a lot of weight there because the food is so good. And then here, it was just hard. I'm used to it, but things like tacos or burritos, which was a staple for college, I just couldn't wrap my head around that. Or even things like Greek food. I had never eaten Greek food. Pita bread and a lot of ground beef. It wasn't like it was anything bad, it was just I wasn't used to it. And yeah.
You talk about the differences in the food. I'm sure there were other big differences as well. Which ones were most noticeable for you? Which ones were the biggest differences?
When I first moved here was the just the warmth. Latin culture is a very warm culture, and it's you just think about when people greet each other, you give each other a kiss, mm-hmm. and it's a lot more touchy-feely, you talk with your hands, you can meet somebody one night, and you can be best friends, literally, because you have discussed all topics, you can discuss politics, and it's not off-limits, you can disagree with each other and still be friends. And when I first moved here, the shock was, as a woman here in, if I would go out to party and I was very touchy-feely with somebody, which for me was completely normal, guys would take that completely wrong, in my opinion. I would be like, well, I didn't mean to say that. And so it was a learning process of, how much do you touch people and how much do you say to people?
Yeah.
And then learning that politics are kind of taboo. Yeah, if you disagree with somebody, people take that as now we're not friends because you're Republican or you're Democrat, or and in college is a very open place. There is a lot of discussion, more than it is once you leave college. But I remember I was in the States, I came in September, and then in December I went home for Christmas, and friends came to greet me, and they said, oh my gosh, you're so cold, because I suddenly wasn't touching anybody, because I just wasn't sure, what was okay and what wasn't okay. And it takes a really long time to find that balance of what is culturally acceptable, where that, bubble around, some people have this bubble that is very, if you break that bubble, it's awful. And I grew up somewhere where there was no bubble, and just learning how that bubble works and who it's okay with to be touchy-feely with and who it's not. And
was there ever a divide between that kind of touchy-feeliness in Latin America and then Sweden, because I'm half French, and it's completely different from in France people, it's cold as well, so it's different. But was there ever
but even in Sweden, it's considered cold compared to Latin America,
mm-hmm.
but in Sweden, once you're friendly, it takes a long time to become friends with somebody.
Yeah.
So in Argentina, you can become friends with somebody right away. In Sweden, it takes a little while. They're a little more skeptical. Unless you're a friend of a friend, or
mm-hmm.
you're in because you know family, it takes a while to get to know people. But once you know them, then it sticks. You're friends.
That's exactly how it is in France.
Yeah. Here it's, and so they're cold, but then once you're in, it's warm.
Mm-hmm.
Here it's interesting. It all depends on where, but it's, you can know somebody for years and years and years here and never break that barrier where you never, you still don't
it's
know
so
that
true.
Much about
yeah.
them. You have a superficial knowledge of who they are, but you really never discuss certain things or discuss.
Yeah, you said exactly like what I've been trying to figure out for like.
Yeah, and it's very hard. I've been living. So I came to Oregon in '94. So I followed my now husband to the States in '90. So let's see, I graduated college in '93. I lived in Sweden for a year. Then I followed him here. Went back to Sweden to finish my master's thesis. And graduate from university in Sweden with my master's. And then moved back to Argentina with my soon-to-be husband because I figured he should know what Argentina was like if we were going to get married because I wasn't just Swedish. He needed to see this other side. Mm-hmm. So we moved there and got married, and we decided to move back to Portland. And we've done that decision twice in our lives. So we decided to move back to Portland, and that was in 96. And so I've known people here in Portland since then, and I've been living here since 96, and still, you still don't have fantastic friends that are like the same connectedness that I've had.
I hear that
elsewhere.
From everyone who's from a different culture than who comes here.
It's really hard.
Well, it's really refreshing. I'm sure it gives you a better perspective on life and how different relationships work in different places. Having lived in three very different countries and experiencing those different social structures, and I think it'd be really refreshing to go to Argentina and just have those barriers be gone. But then it'd be very difficult adjust back.
Yeah, and it's for the first 10 years. I mean, every time I went back, I kind of wished that I was still living there, and I really missed it. But then you get to a point where you start realizing the great things that you have here that you don't have there. And we've debated moving back a lot. And in the end, I wouldn't move back at this point because, well, I have little children and there's safety concerns and living in a big city versus living in Portland. You get used to certain things that you like about every place, and then you make a conscious decision about what works best for the part of life that you're in right now. And
do you think in the future you might move?
I don't know. My husband really wants to move because we've been living here forever in his terms. So I don't, we have four kids. So the youngest one is 21 months. And so I can't see moving right now just because of where we are in life.
Well, with your kids, I mean, you did study in like all three different countries. And so you've experienced those differences. And of course, that's something, education is a big thing that you would consider with your kids as well. What are some of the differences and maybe some of the things that you liked or didn't like in the other countries versus America?
So in Argentina, when I was growing up, you either went to private school or public school. Public schools, generally, if you were middle class or above, you would go to some sort of private school. And there were all kinds of different private schools, different levels of private school, and Catholic schools, all different kinds of private schools. And the school that I went to was an American school. It was really small. My graduating class was 60. So, I mean, really, really small graduating class. So it was a big shock for me to find out. And even Wellesley, when I went there, was 2,200 students. And, to hear, Westview is 2,600 or Sunset is 2,000. That's kind of the size school that I went to for college. And then granted, for my master's, the university I went to was huge. But it's just, what I grew up with was a lot smaller, very, very academic. Just learning how the public school system works here. And that's one of the things I love. I love the fact that my kids are in the Beaverton School District, and I love the schools that they're in. And it's a great school system, and it's free, which is great. And in Sweden, all schools are free, too. So they have that. But it's a little different. They don't do grades in Sweden. It's all either pass or no pass. And having done that, I personally work better with grades because I was very frustrated doing my master's there because a 92% is Excel. Anything between 60% and 92% is pass. So if you get 90%, there's no difference between a 90% and a 70%. And so I was constantly getting 91s and being very frustrated because I wasn't going to get the grade of Excel. And so you get to the point where I was like, well, what's the point? I might as well study less and get an 80. Then, you know, I still was trying to exceed. But it was, I could see how you would not want to try well in for me. And then the other thing, too, is you can retake exams, both in Argentina and in Sweden. So you can take a college course, and then you can, if you fail your exam, and you can retake it in 3 months, which all sounds wonderful and great, except then you have to restudy 3 months from now. So let's say you study biology, and then you failed the exam because you didn't study. And then 3 months from now, you're already taking, you know, some other completely different coursework. And then you have to go back and restudy it, and you learn very quickly that that just sucks. And I knew people who were a year behind in exams, where they're studying third-year coursework, and they're still taking their exams from second year. And so that, you know, I think coming from the American system, I knew not to do that. I kind of was like, no, I'm going to study. I'm going to get it done. And then in Sweden, for example, in the university, you don't take four different classes. You take one class that you really delve into. So I had like one Linology class. It was 8 to 4 every day.
Oh, wow.
Same class, same teacher, same students for, you know, X amount of months. And that's all you do. And so, and the other thing too is when you go into university and you have to decide when you walk in what it is you want to study. So you have to know, like, oh, I'm going to study law, or I'm going to study medicine, or I'm going to do this. And if 3 years down the road you decide, oh, yeah, that wasn't really what I wanted to do, you have to go back and start all over. Yeah, which was the reason I studied in the States to begin with, because I graduated high school at 17 and had absolutely no clue what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. And, well, and you take so many different, you take all these different classes and you know, it's not like you say, oh, I'm pre-med, and then you walk in, and that's all you study, and that's all you know, and this is, I mean, I was pre-med at 17. I ended up with a master's in biology, and then I worked as a technical writer, and now I'm an artist.
Oh,
so
wow.
They are nothing related to each other.
Yeah. Did you change, so you changed your major?
I double majored in biology and Spanish literature, and then I did my master's in limnology. And then I started studying art once I was in Portland.
So what are some of the things that you think are different comparing the United States to other countries that you really like or that really stand out to you, reasons why you want to stay here?
Talking about Portland in particular, like I said before, I love the schools for kids are great. Public schools are really good. People are very friendly in Portland in particular. I mean, even though you don't break that barrier of meeting, you know, getting to know them fully, in general, people are really friendly. It's a safety. I mean, that's a, you know, big one. I've going back to Argentina now, it's not, you have to keep an eye out. You have to watch your purse at all times. I don't really do that here. The purse is over there. It's very safe. My kids go play outside and they're out there and they're in my front yard and I know they're there, but I don't worry about them. I know that a lot of people here worry about their kids. Having grown up another place, and Sweden is even more. I mean, parents in Sweden let their kids out of their sight, far away. I mean, you put your, you leave your kids in your house and go out to dinner and you never, there's not the concern that there is here. Schools, I mean, people just walk into schools in Sweden. There's no signing in at the front door. So I feel here there's a good median. It's safe, yet there's still a concern, you know, like, but I'm not as good, you know, but I let my kids outside. My sister in Buenos Aires, she doesn't let her kids out of her sight. Mm-hmm. If they're not in school, she's with them. So it's, yeah, safety, it's nice. And then everything works here. You don't have to, Argentina, you have to wait in line. If you're going to go pay your water bill, you have to go and stand in line, you have to pay it. Here I've got, you know, everything is online pay, and, you know, your phone works, mm-hmm. your electricity works, it's, you know, things work.
Did you ever encounter any, like, prejudice anywhere you went?
Well, in Argentina, they thought I was a gringa, you know, I thought I was, until I started talking, and then there was no question I was Argentine, so that helped. Yeah, I mean, I think that's another reason I like living here, is nobody ever questions where I'm from. And I mean, it helps not to have an accent, mm-hmm. but it's not like I meet somebody and they immediately ask me where I'm from. Mm-hmm. Not that they do that elsewhere either, but because I speak all three languages fluently and without an accent. But in Argentina, just because I'm tall and blonde, there's a lot of blonde people, but the tall part made me stand out. And then in Sweden, I never really fit in completely because I was Argentinian. And so the U.S. was, once I got used to the U.S. and once I got used to how things work, it's the only place where I feel like I can be me. I'm not, yeah, it's the only place where there's no question. Nobody asks you, you know, are you American? Mm-hmm. One of the reasons, I mean, what I love about Portland, like you live in Boston, the first question out of everybody's mouth is, what college did you go to, or where are you studying? And mm-hmm. here in Portland, nobody cares. Nobody cares where you went to university. Really, I mean, unless you have an accent, people won't ask you where you're from. And so you can really just fit in and be who you want to be. And that's nice. I mean, it's nice to go elsewhere and be different. But when you've been different, it's nice to come somewhere and just be mm-hmm. fit in. Not,
you don't have to fit a specific mold anymore.
No, you can be completely out of the box, and I'm definitely not in any box, you know, studying wise or what I have done, you know, I don't really fit any box, and so it's nice mm-hmm. not to need a box.
It's really freeing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I feel like having lived in Portland my whole life, it's one of those things where after traveling to other places, I definitely noticed that. I can relate and see the, I guess, the really open nature that, for the U.S. anyway, Portland is a very open city.
Yeah. Portland's a very European, one of the reasons that I like it, it's a very European city. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The downtown is more of a downtown, there's more of a downtown feel. Although I know people here who never go downtown, we still make sure that even though we're living in the suburbs, we go downtown all the time, we take our kids downtown. Yeah, so Portland's a very European city. It's, you know, you have a good bus system, you have the light rail system, you have a lot of, so it feels more European, the whole, you know, bicycling. I mean, where I studied in Sweden, it's all bicycling. I mean, if you actually are trying to go around in a car, it's impossible. I mean, it's really, really hard to go around in a car. I studied in Lund, which is in southern Sweden, and it's all these little cobblestone streets, a cathedral from the 11th century. I mean, it's all very small. And you try to go around in a car, and it's impossible. I mean, it's all about walking and mm-hmm. bicycling, and I like that part of Portland. And we left. So we left in 1999. My husband and I were trying to decide what we wanted to do, and we were kind of in a crossroads of, you know, do we have kids? Do we not have kids? We've been married 3 years, and we had a down payment for a house, and we went around all Portland looking for a house. Couldn't find anything that we liked. And we said, well, what kind of things would we like to do before we have kids? And we started rattling off all the countries that we'd like to visit before we had kids. Some of them, which I wouldn't want to go back with kids, but which were great without. And so we decided to use our down payment money to go on a round the world trip.
Oh, wow.
And so we quit our jobs and took 6 months and just traveled the world with one backpack each for 6 months. And at the end of the 6 months, we were back at his parents' place, and we were trying to decide, we were in California, so So we can move anywhere at this point. So we can move anywhere in the world. So we loved Sydney. Decided we couldn't move to Sydney because my parents were in Uruguay and Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
His parents were in California, and we figured that would be like the meanest thing ever to do to a grandparent would be to move to Australia and have kids. And so we focused in on the U.S. and we went through all the cities, and we decided to move to Portland because
mm-hmm.
we loved it that much. And, you know, it was a, price of living was really good, and the people are really nice, and European country, and nature is beautiful here. You can go skiing, you can go to the coast, you can, you have this 3-hour circle around Portland
mm-hmm.
where you can do all these things, and there's very few places in the world where you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, so we've chosen Portland twice in our lives, and it's, I think we'll stay, so.
Did you, how did your parents choose to, how did they end up in Argentina?
So my dad's job sent him to Mexico. So he knew already when he started working that he wanted to move overseas because he wanted to move somewhere other than Sweden just to try different things. And my mom was originally Austrian, so she was thought that was cool. And so his company sent him to Mexico, and then his company sent him down to Argentina. So it was... yeah, he just moved his company down there.
Was anything, like, going on politically in Argentina that was, like...
Yeah, well, they had the military junta
in
the 70s. And then...
So he was he there right before it happened?
They moved down to Argentina. I think it was... Well, they were in Mexico. My mom worked in the Mexico Olympics in 68, right? So, so I think they moved down to Argentina in 69.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and then upheaval started the, and then, so 71, I was born. Yeah, they moved down. And then 73, they left Argentina the day before they closed the airports.
Wow.
So that was really good. And then, so they moved to Europe, and then my dad started working for this other company, and they wanted to send him down to Argentina, because in Argentina, a lot of business is, really, a lot of it is who you know and contacts. And contacts are very important,
mm-hmm.
and he already had a lot of contacts, so he started working with this other company, and they wanted to send him down there, and this was in 75, and my dad's comment was like, well, it couldn't be any worse than 73, and he was wrong, but we moved back there in 75, and, but I lived very sheltered, extremely sheltered. They kept me... I mean, we lived in an apartment. I went to the American school.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know really much of what was happening during the Malvinas War, which not called the Falklands War, but we called it the Malvinas War, in 82. The only thing was, you know, we had bomb threats at school a couple of times because we were in American school. So, but other than that, I mean, I didn't really find out about what was happening in the country as a whole until I got into high school, and it was,
mm-hmm.
I remember one time they had a forensics person, CSI person come in to talk about bones, finding bones, figuring out who the bones belonged to. And that was the first time I thought, sunk in the, you know, what was really happening, the amount of people that were dying and really what was going on. And by that point, it was the end of it. So.
Right.
So really sheltered. I didn't actually study. Once I got to college and I met a lot of professors who had left Chile and who had left
mm-hmm.
Argentina because, you know, of the military situation there and just, you know, being in danger. A lot of people moved to Sweden. So I met a lot of Argentinians and Chileans who had moved to Sweden when I was in Sweden who had left Argentina because... they were considered terrorists, and, you know, they left, and, but I found that all out kind of in hindsight, and studied it at that point.
Were there things when you would, like, look back that would kind of, in the context of, like, knowing what was actually going on, maybe that you didn't understand in the moment, but, like, did you ever look back and be like, oh, like, that's why this happened, oh, like, that's why that happened?
Yeah, my best friend in fourth grade
mm-hmm.
Left the country overnight. and the way my parents explained it to me. I mean, the father was a journalist who worked for the Buenos Aires Herald, which was an American, an English newspaper. And he was writing, and my parents at that point told me, I mean, they told me that his family was getting death threats, that they had, you know, tried to kidnap him, you know, so I found out all these stories, but I mean, I have no contact with her, because I mean, you know, fourth grade, pre-internet, you know, pre-Facebook, you know, they left overnight, and there was other people that we knew that left overnight, and then at different points, when, you know, the money devalued completely, like, we had there was a lot of Swedish people, a lot of Europeans who lived in Argentina, and that community disappeared in a period of months because the money devalued so much, in the city, you know. So, yeah, there were things definitely that you look at them and you say, yeah. Or I never got an allowance growing up because there was no point, because the inflation was so high that if they, you know, they you couldn't teach somebody to save your money.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you gave somebody, especially if you gave pesos or australes, you know, our money changed all the time. So you either had pesos, you had australes, and you had pesos, and somebody gave you pesos, you would go spend it.
Yeah.
There was no sense of why would you save it. I mean, you could put it into dollars, but you wouldn't stick it in a bank.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's just not going to work. And
right.
So I never got an allowance because what would be the point? I mean, you can't save your money.
Yeah.
So, and then you go to Sweden where it was like everything was steady. And, you know, it's, so, you know, you just kind of, luckily I got both sides of the story. So.
Yeah. How's going to Sweden after being in America? How was that? Was there like any shock or anything?
You know, for as much as I complain about Portland winters, Swedish winters are way worse. It's the reason I am not moving back to Sweden. It's because I am not a snow person. I am a heat person. So winter there was tough. It's very rigid in a lot of ways. I mean, so I was in class from, you know, 9 to 4, but the bank is only open from, you know, 9 to 3.
Mm-hmm.
So, and nothing is open on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
On Saturday, you know, when I was living, I think now they've kind of, now they have more things that are open later, but there's no 24 hour.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't go to the supermarket.
You're after,
you know, there's the liquor stores, you know, and it's, which we have here in Portland too, but you can't buy wine or beer at the supermarket. You have to go
to the liquor store,
to the Systembolaget, which is, you know, the state-run monopoly, liquor monopoly. And it was only open Monday through Friday when I was in college. So if you did not buy your beer by Friday afternoon at 6 p.m., I'm sorry. There's nothing for you all weekend long. And
oh my God.
So, yeah, so it was a difference just figuring out when things were open.
Yeah.
And
but you, like, felt Swedish.
I felt Swedish, except I hadn't watched all those Swedish TV shows that all the, you know how, same thing here. Like, I never watched the Brady Bunch.
Uh-huh.
And everybody, when I moved, I remember sitting in college, and then we talked about Brady Bunch episodes, and I'm like, I'm not sure what you're talking about. Watched Charlie's Angels. I watched Mission Impossible in Spanish, you know. But, so there's always cultural things that if you did not grow up somewhere, you miss. Yeah, so that was the thing. I didn't really feel Swedish either.
Mm-hmm.
And there was distrust. Because when I went there for my master's, because I had done 4 years of college here, I walked in at the master's level. Most of them had known each other from the beginning of the... I had worked with the professor who had written our textbook. So that was a little weird when I moved there. Because It took a little, I mean, and it's the same thing, it takes a little while to warm up.
How did your perspective and your view of each country change?
Well, you look at all of them. I think when you're growing up somewhere and you have all the emotional ties, you have very emotional connection to the country. And so sometimes you become very nationalistic about your country. Like, my parents were more Swedish than Swedish people were because we were living in Argentina. So a lot of, like, cultural things, like, certain, like, Christmas traditions, like, my parents stuck to certain traditions extremely firmly because we were living in Argentina. And then you go to Sweden and people are not doing that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
but my parents really stuck to them really strongly. So you move and you become very nationalistic in certain ways, but then you also start looking at the country from an outsider's perspective too, so you can see, you can start criticizing more. And so you can look at the Swedish school system and say, yeah, it has things that are not working. Obviously people who are there too think that too, but I think you can start looking in as an outsider, even though you're an insider, mm-hmm. and see things more critically.
That's exactly how my family feels with friends.
And so you still have this connection and you still love the country, but you can look at it more critically. And the hard thing now that I've been living in the States for so long, I'm not American technically, but I notice that I'm looking at the U.S. sometimes less critically than I notice, like when you go to Sweden and you go to Argentina, people speak very critically of the U.S.
Yeah.
sometimes.
Yes.
About certain things. And now I find myself like, you know, I defend the U.S. because, you know, this is where I'm living,
yeah.
you know, and this is where I am right now. And so, you know, you have this weird inside outside.
Do you feel like the international view of the United States has changed in the past few decades? If you look at some of our foreign policy decisions haven't necessarily evolved maybe as much as some of us would have liked. there's a lot of things I know, like, being American citizens, we read about in history and we're appalled of what has happened at a government level. But I don't know if you feel like there's always interesting international perspectives when it comes to the United States. I have friends that don't live here and have interesting things to say about the States, which, I mean, probably are generalizations, and I always find myself trying to it's not totally like that, but just coming from a perspective where you're living in two other countries. I moved in and out.
Yeah, it's the same way as we look at other countries. I mean, you look at a country and you generalize. You don't.
Right.
You're not meeting individual people from the country,
yeah.
and then learning all of their different perspectives. And so you got to think that that's exactly what's happening. And even though, European media, for example, is a lot more to the point.
Yeah.
And less sensationalized. And,
yeah.
I mean, to this day, I don't watch U.S. media other than CNN. I mean, it's all about, it's BBC and NPR for me, because I just don't the whole, who killed who and what's for Portland connection. You know, there was a Haiti earthquake and there were three Portlanders there, you know, that kind of,
mm-hmm.
But even though their media is a lot, I don't know if it's more open or less, just less sensationalized, their media still has a certain viewpoint,
mm-hmm.
of how things are, and that's what they're seeing.
Yeah.
And they see, I grew up, you know, I finished high school 89, so I watched all of those, you know, Sweet 16 and stuff, and that's what you imagine an American high school to be. Until you come to the U.S. and you're like, oh, yeah. I mean, so you got to think they're getting all of their stuff from the TV that they're watching, and they're watching all these reality TV shows. And they think that that is what most of America is.
Yeah. What a wonderful way to document our culture.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, I can't watch that stuff. It drives me absolutely batty. Okay, I'm not American in that sense. But, I don't know if most of America watches it or not. But so the same way that the U.S. generalizes countries, the other countries are going to generalize the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And everywhere I travel, I mean, I'll tell people I'm from different places depending on where I am.
Yeah.
Well, and the funny thing, too, is sometimes when you say, see, I don't really say I'm American because I'm not, but I,
mm-hmm.
even just living here, there's a lot more questions. And because politics is an open subject, there's a lot of political questions. Like, I go, you know, to Sweden or to Argentina, and there's a lot of political questions where they're asking me, well, why did they do this? Or why is the U.S. doing that? Or what is their perspective? And it's really, they're trying to get the inside scoop. You know, they're figuring, which is really nice if you really think about it.
Right. Yeah.
They're actually trying to find out from an insider what it, you know, why are you doing this? Or why did you decide to do this? But then it's funny because then it's like, well, it wasn't really me deciding to do this. So if it's a decision that they don't like, they ask you sometimes very, like, why did you do this? And it's like, well, I didn't do this. I don't agree with this, but, you know, this is what happened. And I,
yeah. Talking about maybe your experience with political climates in Sweden or Argentina, do you think that that, like, divisiveness affects the greater political spectrum and how well the country is able to work?
Part of the difference is that there's more than two parties.
Right.
And yeah. So, because, and here, if you're from a third party, you know you're never going to win.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the end, you're going to have to figure out, you know, you have to choose a side.
Right.
While in a lot of other countries, there's not only two parties. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different parties. And so, sometimes you come into power and you have to compromise with some of these other smaller factions, mm-hmm. because otherwise you won't. You won't be talking to the majority. It's hard to come by compromises anywhere. The difference is that there's more than two parties.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you just have more voices.
What are the most important lessons that you feel you've learned with adapting and integrating into a new country?
Having grown up in two different cultures, adapting has never been a problem for me,
mm-hmm.
because I can, and especially knowing a lot of languages really helps,
mm-hmm.
because then if you know a Germanic language or you know a Latin language, you can kind of figure out other Germanic and other Latin languages. So I speak Spanish, I studied French for a year. But I can understand Italian, and I can read a lot of the, I mean, I studied German, and I can read a lot of languages, and so it really helps. And so whenever I travel anywhere, I can adapt, because partly because you know the language, and learning another language is, it's so important, because just giving you an insight that way is
definitely
really. It really changes your viewpoint, just knowing the other language and being able to communicate with people more openly, because you can actually communicate with them.
Right.
Yeah. Well, once and you know one, it's a little easier to start picking up more.
The others, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if they're two different kinds. Go into every situation with open eyes.
Yeah.
And just be willing to understand that everybody's different, even within, there is no generalizations, even within every country there's different people with different ideas, and just being open and listening.
All right. It has been a pleasure.
Yeah,
thank you so much for your time.
Thanks.
It's been wonderful.
Fun.